Welcome to another episode of MarTech Unraveled, the podcast where we decode the complexities of marketing technology through practical conversations with experts driving the industry forward. Today, we are diving into the topic that's at the core of every successful marketing strategy, data. And more importantly, how to make sense of it in a way that drives real business outcomes. Joining me is Susan Gattura, the founder of Phoenix KE Analytics. She's a passionate, self-taught senior data analytics specialist with over 10 years of experience. Susan, it's a pleasure to have you on the MarTech Unraveled podcast. Before we get into the heart of today's discussion, can you tell us a bit more about your journey and the work you've been doing at Phoenix Analytics?
Thank you, Fiona, for that very warm welcome. It's an honor to be here. And yes, I'd be happy to talk about my journey. Just as you've mentioned, I am a senior analytics specialist, but my journey has been quite unconventional. I did not have a technical background, or even when I got into data, it's a field I did not even know existed. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the learnings or the skills that I've acquired have acquired through online platforms such as YouTube and Google, because back on the day, we didn't have ChatGPT and all these AI tools that have come about. So it was like literally being thrown in the deep end, and you have to learn how to swim, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's been a journey that I'm very grateful for, because it also spoke to my strengths, and I feel so content being in this field. Mm-hmm. And it's because of my journey and how I found myself into it without any resources, without any mentorship, that I came to found Phoenix KE Analytics. That was 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And Phoenix is honestly a labor of love. It's a data community. I started with the goal of creating awareness, building capacity, and connecting people around the field of data. Mm-hmm. So whatever the role is, it could be analytics, engineering, or data science, or just understanding what data even is in a real world, practical sense. And it's been, and just to narrow down on what inspired me to start it, I'd say it's frustration and hope. Just like I've mentioned, the frustration of getting into a field I didn't even know about, didn't even know how to navigate or the resources to use. And also the frustration because once I got in there, I kept seeing a gap. So many brilliant young people, especially in Kenya and across Africa, were interested in data but didn't know how to start, didn't have access to mentorship, and didn't feel confident enough to pursue it. And on the other side, the hope side is where I saw companies saying, we can't find data talent. It didn't make sense to me. So like I said, I've worked in the space for over 10 years now across multiple industries and markets, and I've seen firsthand the power of data to influence decisions, drive impact, and even shift narratives. So yeah, I thought, why not create a space where people can learn, ask questions, build projects, connect. And that's how Phoenix was born. It started as a WhatsApp group, a mentorship call here, but then it's grown. Now we are over 7,000 of us. And we're also running mentorship programs. We are hosting workshops. We're doing school outreach and even organizing mixers and open dialogue events to challenge what the data space should look like. I genuinely believe that if we want to grow the tech ecosystem in Africa, we have to be intentional about nurturing the next generation. And that's what Phoenix is about.
I love that. Thank you so much for that introduction. I mean, it's interesting if I just reflect on, you know, how, you know, we met and how we reconnected. You know, our paths crossed many years ago when we were working at a particular similar organization in the e-commerce space. And then I started seeing you on, you know, social media, you know, someone talking very passionately about data. And at first I didn't recognize it was you. until I looked further and I'm like, wait, hang on, I know her.
I know.
So
yeah, that was good reconnecting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the work that you're doing is, you know, really impactful and catching the eye of many. So really excited delve more.
Thank you so much.
So what are some of the misconceptions, you know, that people have around the data profession? You've talked a little bit about it, but I would love for you to, you know, just unpack that a little bit more.
Yeah, sure. That's such a good question because, you know, I think the misconceptions around the data profession are part of what keep a lot of people from exploring it. Mm-hmm. And also out there in social media, I see some people saying some things mm-hmm. and I'm like, come on now, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's also why it's really important for me to also share and just debunk or demystify all these things that people are saying out here. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And one major misconception is that you have to be insanely good at math or statistics to have a career in data. I mean, look at myself. My background is in finance. It's an area I didn't even get to practice because I just found myself into tech, right? Mm-hmm. And I hear this all the time. People assuming you need a PhD or that if you didn't study computer science, you're automatically disqualified. But that's not true. Data is a multidisciplinary field. Yes, there are technical roles that require strong coding or math skills, mm-hmm. but there are also so many other roles where what matters more is your ability to think critically, spot patterns, ask the right questions, mm-hmm. and communicate findings clearly. Mm-hmm. Another common one is data equals dashboards. Many things that analytics is just about building pretty graphs in Power BI or Tableau. But dashboards are just the output. The real work is what happens before, you know, framing the problem, mm-hmm. cleaning the messy data, choosing the right metrics, and also translating all that into a meaningful story. So mm-hmm. dashboards are just the tip of the iceberg. And then another misconception, I'll just say three, this is mm-hmm. the last one, mm-hmm. is that data is only for tech companies. I've had people say, but I work in healthcare or I'm in agriculture or education. What does data have to do with me? And I'm always telling them, if you're making decisions, you're using data, whether it's patient records or crop yields or school attendance or even event feedback. That's all data. It cuts across every industry. Mm-hmm. So, as I said, as the kinds of data personally that I've worked with, mm-hmm. it really runs the full spectrum. For example, I've dealt a lot with customer behavior data, where you need to understand why users are dropping off an app or which product feature they loved, mm-hmm. or why your customer comes for the first product and doesn't return. You know, you're trying to understand your customer. Mm-hmm. And then there's also the operational data where you try to figure out where inefficiencies were costing a company money. There's also education data, such as the kind that I analyze for Phoenix for mm-hmm. our community programs, where we monitor, you know, learner progress, engagement, and also the impact to also improve our mentorship program. So when we say data, we are really talking about everyday information that tells a story. It's not this abstract, intimidating thing. It's just a mirror of the world around us. And mm-hmm. learning how to work with it gives you superpowers in today's job market. Mm. Yeah.
Ooh, I like that. I like that for sure. I think the one about, you know, you have to be super good at math or super technical is one, you know, really big one that makes people shy away from, you know, really just delving into very simple numbers that are easily available to them.
A 100%. And also another mm-hmm. thing is people normally run away from the math and everything because the idea of math is what they learned in high school. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, that is not a good example of how you should be taught. So okay. People have so much trauma when they hear math and they remember how you're being taught in high school and they're like, that's not for me. Mm-hmm. But I also have so many friends who thought the same. Mm-hmm. And then now, once they got to university or they got to the job market, they came to realize, you know, it's just the approach that was used. Mm-hmm. It's really just a mindset thing and just need to change your attitude mm-hmm. about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. For sure. Yeah. There's a lot of trauma from school about mathematics.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, I mean, data science has received a lot of attention in the last few years. However, this is just one discipline in the data profession. So, you know, could you help us unravel the different roles within the data ecosystem and what skills are required to thrive in those different roles?
Yeah, definitely. You're right. Data science has definitely become a thing in the last few years, especially when they start saying data science is the sexiest job of the century. Wow. I'm telling you, we've seen a flood in the market. Mm-hmm. But it's just one piece of a much bigger ecosystem. I like to think of the data space as an ecosystem with different players, like a relay team, each with their own role, but all working towards the same goal. And that is helping organizations make better data-driven decisions. Mm-hmm. So let me break down a few of those roles. We have the data analyst. That's where most people start. Mm-hmm. So they normally collect, clean, and analyze data to help answer business questions. So for example, why are your sales dropping in region X? Or which customer segment is most profitable? That's a data analyst. And the skills that they'll need is Excel. They will need SQL. They will need data visualization tools such as Power BI or Tableau. Mm-hmm. Critical thinking and storytelling, because it's not just about numbers. It's about insights. Mm-hmm. And also you'll find yourself some analysts also using Python or R, as and which can be a bonus as well. Mm-hmm. Then we have the data scientists. So now this role goes deeper. It's more advanced, often requiring predictive modeling and machine learning. Mm-hmm. So they normally use algorithms and models to forecast future trends. Mm-hmm. So you could say a data analyst is descriptive analytics and a data scientist is descriptive. So for example, a data scientist is predictive analytics. Mm-hmm. So for example, they could be answering questions such as which customers are likely to churn, mm-hmm. or can we predict demand for our product next quarter? That's where a data scientist comes in. Mm-hmm. And the skills needed are strong coding skills in Python or R, statistics and probability, machine learning libraries. We have data wrangling and advanced analytics, mm-hmm. and also communication skills. That one cuts across the board for mm-hmm. everybody, because at the end, you have to communicate your models or your dashboards. Then we have the data engineer. These mm-hmm. are behind the scenes people. Mm-hmm. They are really, really important, but I've come to realize a lot of people don't really understand, mm-hmm. or it's very underrated right now. They're the ones who build the infrastructure. They make sure the data is flowing from various sources and is usable by the data analysts and the data scientists. So they basically design and maintain the data pipelines and databases. So without mm-hmm. them, mm-hmm. there's no clean, reliable data to work with. Literally, we the analysts and the scientists their work will come after the data engineer is done. Mm-hmm. And their skills are SQL or NoSQL databases, of mm-hmm. course, programming languages like Python or Java or Scala. Then there's a cloud platform such mm-hmm. as Amazon Web Services, we have Azure, we have GCP. Mm-hmm. You also need to learn about ETL processes. This is mm-hmm. where now you extract, transform and load the data, mm-hmm. and many other big tools that I don't want to mention and confuse people here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'd like to leave it there, because those are the main roles, and mm-hmm. the other roles that come after that, these three roles are the foundation. But of course, we do have the no-code roles, and mm-hmm. I'll just mention the no-code roles, such as the data governance roles. Mm-hmm. And this one is going to be in demand, especially right now in this age of AI, mm-hmm. because as data grows, so does the need for structure. Mm-hmm. So the data governance specialists, they ensure data quality, compliance, privacy, and also proper management of data assets across an organization. Mm-hmm. So they need to be very well versed on policies that surround data. Mm-hmm. So as you can see, it's not a one-size-fits-all field. And the beauty of data profession is that it's incredibly versatile and there's space for different strengths. Mm-hmm. So it's just for you to check out the skill set that are required, mm-hmm. and identify where your strengths and interests lie, and then building those skills to match that path. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow. That is so insightful. Like there's like something for everyone. Like if you want to be super hardcore, you can, you know, be a data engineer and a data science. If you want to be more, you know, analytical and more, you know, well, all of them require storytelling and communication, but maybe the data analyst is more front-end facing. If you want to be more front-end facing, you can be a data analyst. That is really, really interesting. And I love the fact that you also, you know, talked about, because I think when we think about data, we always think about the end product, but not really how it got there.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. People, they really do need to understand the whole data life cycle. It's going to be very helpful, yeah.
Mm. Exactly. And how to integrate certain, platforms, because when you're talking about different data points, they're usually from different software. So how do you integrate them? And that's where a data engineer would, know the structures of databases and what to integrate and, all of that.
Exactly.
This is really interesting. So if we had to recommend, one underutilized analytics tool or technique for marketers, given that this is a, marketing technology podcast, what would you recommend? What would you say that underutilized analytics tool or technique that the marketers who are listening to this should be leveraging right now? What would that be?
So if I had to recommend one tool that marketers are definitely underutilizing right now, it would be Excel. I am a Excel evangelist. I'm telling you, Microsoft need to start making me an ambassador or to pay me at this rate. Because I know it sounds simple, but Excel, especially with features like Power Query and Power Pivot, it's incredibly powerful. So let me talk about Power Query and Power Pivot. Yeah. Power Query is one of those features that can save you a lot of time. It helps with data cleaning, transformation, which is something marketers often do manually. You can pull data from various sources, clean it up, and automatically refresh it without having to redo everything every time. And this makes it so much easier to keep your data up to date and ready for analysis. And then now we have also the Power Pivot, which takes your data analysis to the next level. It allows you to handle large data sets and create complex data models without slowing down your system. It's perfect for when you need to analyze data from multiple sources or dive deeper into, let's say, campaign performance. You can create dynamic reports and easily track key metrics without relying on simple formulas or static reports. And all this is in Excel. People might think you can say all this and then they're thinking of some expensive tool right there. And this is something you can do with a tool that you probably use every day, but you don't know the magnitude of the things that it can do. And I think the reason Excel gets overlooked is that people tend to think of it as just a basic tool for simple tasks like summing or just budgeting or making quick lists. But once you start using some of the functions, like I mentioned, the Power Query, you realize how much more it can do. You can create real-time reports. You can focus trends, analyze data in ways that are often reserved for more advanced tools. And you, just in Excel. And just something I'd like to add is data analysis is going to be an essential skill in the coming years. And Excel is one of the best places to start building that foundation. So if you're not already using it, now is the time to start at least learning the basics and growing from there. It will not only make your work easier, but will set you up for success as data continues to play a bigger role in decision making. Have you ever discovered something new in Excel that made you think, wait, it can do that? You know, it still does that for me 10 years later. I'll still find something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, actually, Excel is actually the OG of dashboards and, visualization. Like it was there like way before Power BI, Dynamics and all the, and Tableau, all the beautiful tools, it was there.
Yeah.
But I think it's a bit I think many people shied away from it because you initially had to understand the formulas in order to get a great output. But I think, as you've said, like now it's been, a lot has changed. And so they've made it a lot easier, for people to discover things. It actually even prompts you with ideas of, hey, do you want us to autofill this formula or do you want to do this and so on, correct?
Yeah, that's true. Especially, it's it can also be integrated with AI. I think Microsoft are doing that to just even make it easier for you to use it. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And just to dive a little bit deeper into Power Query and Power Pivot. So let's say, I wanted to, use Power Query. Just walk us a little bit through. I know it's a bit hard to maybe, get to the specifics of it on a audio, when you're not able to demonstrate, but like, what are the inputs that you require if you were to use Power Query and Power Pivot? What are the things you need to have ready to set up to use them?
Oh my gosh. I feel like this would be such a practical thing. It would be such a practical thing for me to to explain, but it's, yeah, because I need to have the Excel to show you how to go about it right now. How to also, you know, there's a point in Excel where you have to go and load your data or choose where your data is coming from and then transform it once you're there. That's where now you remove the unwanted columns. That's where you merge columns. That's where you remove duplicates. Or if you have multiple files, that's the place where you merge them. And then once you load it and it applies, now you're able to play around with it. But I feel like right now it would be really difficult for me to speak through it without actually showing you how to do it.
Fair enough. But what I understood or got from that is you need to have your data sources, you know, some data sources that you're pulling from. You need to have an idea of, you know, what you want to clean or have an eye for looking for, like where the, you know, anomalies are so you can clean it.
Exactly. Yeah, that's really important because, you know, at the end of the day, you're trying to derive insights. So you need to know what should be here, what shouldn't be here as you work on your analysis.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Another interesting question I think that I've encountered, I think with also data is, and you touched on it a bit earlier, is like knowing what questions to ask. Because I think sometimes, you know, managers or people who are seeking answers from data, when they're requesting for the data, you know, it's hard to know how do you get the best output from, you know, your data analyst if you don't know the right questions. So how would you recommend like someone who's a manager or someone who's in need of answers to have the right questions? Because if you have the right questions, then your analyst is able to extract the right data for you.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, as a manager, you already have your domain expertise and you're going to an analyst because you have a problem, right? And actually, then that's why context is everything. Because even myself as an analyst, before I dive into all the technical stuff, I'll start by asking the big question, why does this matter? I'm the one to ask the question because I'm the one who's doing the analysis, right? I'll ask, why does this matter? What's the story behind the numbers? People will listen a lot more if they know why they should care in the first place. Like, for example, if I'm showing that sales are up, I shouldn't just stop there. I need to explain how this impacts the business and why it's a big deal. Like before any analysis, you really, really do need to understand the problem because you want your analysis to help solve this problem. Otherwise, you're just, there's nothing really you're doing. And then after that is simplifying things. Like you don't need to throw everything at them. You know, focus on the insights that really matter. And that's why you really need to understand the problem. The simpler you can make it, the better. You can always use visuals like charts or graphs. A picture really does say 1,000 words. It's like basically breaking down a story into, breaking it down into few easy to digest chapters. And then when you go through the numbers, you try to tie them back to a bigger narrative. For example, instead of just saying website traffic went up by 30%, you could say something like our website traffic shot up by 30%, which makes the timing of, let's say our new social media campaign looks like our audience is really responding well. You see, this helps people see how the data connects to real world stuff. And it makes it more interesting and more relatable than just throwing around some numbers. And at the end of it all, it's very important to make it actionable. Like this is key. Once I show you the data, I need to also make it clear what needs to happen next. Don't be there leaving, you know, your managers or your CEOs wondering, okay, so what now? Okay, you've told me about all these numbers. So what now? So you need to give them some clear steps based on what the data is showing. For example, if you're seeing a dip in engagement, instead of just reporting that, you know, suggest a plan on how to turn it around. And it's also so important to keep in mind who you're talking to. For example, executives don't want to be bogged down into many details. They don't have the time. Mm-hmm. More often than not, getting the time of your CEO to go through your reports, like 5 to 10 minute max. So if it's a CEO, it has to focus on the bigger picture. But if, let's say, I'm talking to my manager or my team, now that's when I can dive a little deeper into the nitty-gritties and show them exactly how the data affects their work. And the trick here is, if you really want to make the data stick, throw in some real life examples or scenarios that make people, that people can actually relate to. People connect with stories. And that's why we have a data storytelling element in data analysis. So if you can tie your data to something that they've experienced or seen happen in real life, that is gold, by the way. And, you know, at the end of the day, storytelling with data is, it's all about making it accessible and actionable for people. So because when they understand the story behind the numbers, they'll be a lot more likely to care and take action. So think about the people that you're talking to. It's so important to consider your audience. That is always the first thing, because that also helps you work on your analysis and the story that you're going to tell.
I love that. I love the fact that you've just unpacked the storytelling side of data. You know, what's the why? What's the so what? Why should I care? And what should I do after you've told me this, right? I don't know, just now something popped into my head. It, you know, how every year Spotify does the, you know, Spotify Unwrapped, right? That's a storytelling element, right? Of
that's data. A storytelling element for sure. It's so nice, you know, but when you're listening to music, you really don't know the numbers behind it, right? And then every end of the year, they give you this Spotify Wrapped and you're like, oh my gosh, this is what I was listening to this whole year. And but when you're listening to it at the moment, you're not thinking this could add up to all this. So that's the beauty of, you know, storytelling.
But all the behind the scenes work is all what you talked about, what the hardcore data engineer who's put the databases together, the analyst who has analyzed the data, the data science who has done predictive, you know, modeling around all of that. And then we, the consumers, get the pretty story to tell us.
Exactly. Very, very true.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. So as data privacy regulations become stricter in Kenya and globally, how should marketers balance the need for data-driven insights with a growing demand for consumer trust and transparency?
Okay, that's a really, really good question. And let's be honest, most Kenyan companies wouldn't care less about data privacy until they get hit with a fine or have to deal with an angry mob of customers on Twitter or X, as they call it nowadays. But there are new data privacy rules popping up everywhere. And marketing especially, you guys need a lot of data because you need to understand your customers. But at the same time, you have to make sure that you're respecting people's privacy and building trust. So it's all about, you know, finding that balance. And first of all, or first off, transparency is key. Like, let your customers know exactly what data you're collecting and why you're collecting it. No one likes feeling like they're being tracked without knowing what's going on. So you need to have clear and honest privacy policies. Be upfront about how you're using their data and what they can expect in return. So, for example, if you're offering discounts or better services based on their preferences, let them know that's what they're getting in exchange of sharing their data. You know, like, for example, right now, let's say you go to a supermarket and you pay using M-Pesa. Those supermarkets take that as consent of you allowing them to send you messages, promotional messages. I don't remember being asked if this was okay, you know, and it's just because I paid. Now you think, okay, let me send you messages. No. And that's why now we get into the consent bit of things. You make sure you're not just gathering data without asking. A simple pop-up asking for permission or a checkbox during signups can go a long way. And keep in mind, you know, people's preferences may change. So always give them the option to update or withdraw consent. Right now, that's what they do. They will send you a message and then they tell you,
if you want to opt out of this, you can, you know, send yes or no or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember you asking me if you could use my number for this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where a lot of organizations also go wrong. And then also, at the end of the day, for example, in now marketing, mm-hmm. you still need to get actionable insights from the data that you have. But you need to try and do this without invading privacy. So you could use aggregated or anonymized data. That's a great way to still get valuable insights while also respecting individual privacy. So, for example, you could look at trends across large groups of people rather than focusing on one single person. And anyway, trends are better because they help you understand customer behavior, preference, and needs without, you know, compromising on their personal information.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is the security. Let's talk about data security for a second. Mm-hmm. You can collect all the data you want, but if you're not protecting it properly, then what's the point? Because investing in strong data security measures will give your customers peace of mind, knowing that their information is safe with you. Plus, it'll keep you on the right side of those stricter regulations.
Mm.
This just reminded me of, I don't know that you watched this Netflix show. Mm-hmm. It was about this dating site company.
Mm-hmm.
And it was mostly for married people.
Uh-huh.
And then it's like what is it called? Tinder.
Uh-huh.
Like, but for married people. And then they had a security breach.
Mm-hmm.
And all the data
mm-hmm.
was released.
Mm.
So now you imagine you're just chilling. Yeah. And then you see your husband or your wife
mm-hmm.
is among these people who are in this site.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now you see the scandal that comes in. Mm-hmm. Then mm-hmm. people will start suing you and stuff
mm-hmm.
because, you know, you say that you're protecting their data and no one mm-hmm. is going to have access to it.
Yeah.
So things like that are trust killers.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's why data security is so important. And then you see at the end of the day, when you do all these things, you build trust over time.
Mm-hmm.
And if your customers see that you're consistently transparent, respectful of their data, and mm-hmm. committed to protecting their privacy, they'll be more likely to stick around. And trust mm-hmm. is big for businesses. It's a currency, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that I feel it's really important. And in the end, you'll find that also people will feel a lot better about sharing their data with you if you also uphold your end of the bargain. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And I feel, you know, in this market, we're still yet to fully understand, and not everybody fully understands the importance of, you know, your data and protecting your data and knowing where it's going. But I think as, you know, the technology evolves and as the world really, you know, moves forward with technology, you know, this will really become something very, very important. So, you know, it's not something to think about, oh, it's for the future. It's something for businesses to think about right now.
100%. Very important.
Now, given the rapidly evolving landscape of marketing technology, how do you personally stay ahead of industry shifts and continuously adapting your analytics strategies?
Oh my God. You know, that part, it's mm-hmm. a part of the job that I don't like. It's like a full-time job on its own,
mm-hmm.
right? Because of the way technology is evolving so fast and you really have to keep up with it for you to, you know, remain relevant at the mm-hmm. end of the day. And for me, sometimes it's just probably 30 minutes on YouTube doing mm-hmm. a deep dive into probably, it could be a new dashboarding technique or probably testing out something I saw in a community forum. And mm-hmm. it might not always be directly relevant to our current project, but it keeps my toolbox sharp.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, I'm also super big on community. I mean, I have one, that's why Phoenix is here. And
mm-hmm.
I lean on my network a lot, and that's one of them. And we are constantly exchanging notes on what's working, what's flopping,
mm-hmm.
and which tools are worth the hype. Those conversations are gold because you get real on the ground experiences rather than just shiny marketing pitches from tool vendors. And every day there's a new tool, especially with this AI stuff.
Yeah.
Every day there's a new tool that is going to come up.
Mm.
And it's always important to go back to the core principle, strategy before tools. Even when a new platform shows up that promises to do data analysis in 10 seconds, you know, mm-hmm. you need to ask yourself, how does this actually improve how we gather insights or make better decisions? Mm-hmm. Because if it doesn't add value, I'm not jumping on the bandwagon just for the sake of it.
Mm-hmm.
So basically it's a mix of staying curious, being part of the right circles, and just knowing when to say, this is just noise. And that's, and knowing when to say, this is just noise. Mm-hmm. So that's what's helped me adapt and also thrive in this space, and also attending events and conferences. You also get to learn about what other companies are doing in different countries. Mm-hmm. It also opens up your mind quite a bit. Yeah. But, you know, learning is a never ending journey, and yeah, it has to happen whether we like it or not. How about you? How do you usually stay ahead in your industry?
Love the question. So definitely YouTube. YouTube is a big one. Yeah. I mean, you can learn basically anything and everything on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Also courses. I've recently just been, you know, getting onto quite a few courses that I've seen, you know, advertised in different community forums I'm in as well. So short courses that can help me like sharpen my skills and just know what the latest technology is or latest technique is as well.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, just reading, like following Phoenix KE Analytics, for example, you know, because, you know, you give really relevant and localized information. So following people who are, you know, giving real world applicable and localized information like yourself and other places as well that I follow on Instagram and LinkedIn. So that's how I keep myself up to date on skills and what's going on in this world. Because for sure, learning has never been more critical than now. Like you can't just sit and be like, I know everything now, I'm good.
Yeah, there's nothing like that.
Yeah. So this has been such an enlightening conversation. I'm even more excited about data now. I mean, I can say like, I've also had those moments where I'm like, you know, it's all too much overwhelming data. But I think, you know, now that you've talked about the different areas of data and how, you know, the tools out there and how data, the profession of data has evolved and you can find a space for yourself. You know, tell us a bit more about where listeners can find you and, you know, what programs are you running to currently or upcoming that also our listeners can look out for if they want to learn more about getting into the data field.
Yeah, sure. Definitely. Of course, I'm on LinkedIn. I like to post some stuff there once in a while. They can also find me on Instagram. That's where I do a lot. It's like my vocal diary. That's where I go and share a lot of the things that are on my mind. Mm-hmm. You can follow me on Susan Analytics on Instagram and also the Phoenix page. It's Phoenix KE Analytics on Instagram and X and also LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. Currently, we have an Excel workshop that's starting. Actually, that's next week. But this is something we're going to be doing quite a bit in the coming months. So if you're interested in sharpening your Excel skills, you can follow us for updates. And we also love to go on and also do corporate trainings. If your company needs some sort of training, especially in Excel or Power BI, please let us know. We try to customize it depending on the level that you're in. And I believe data literacy should be across board. It should not be left to a specific group of people in a company. It should be literally everybody. If you're talking about being data driven, it has to start with your people as well. Yeah, so that's me. And it's been an honor being here, Fiona, and to be part of your podcast. I can't wait to listen. By the way, do you know, I never listen to any of my, anything that I will do, I will not listen to it, but I promise I will listen to this one. I find it really awkward to listen to myself. I will never listen to myself. Do you listen to your podcast?
I do. But I think it's a common thing where people are like, oh, I don't want to listen to my voice, but you know, I have to listen to make sure it sounds good. And you know, it turned out the way it should. So it's a common thing. I think everyone has a problem, but you just have to, you know, if you have to, you kind of have to get used to it.
That's true.
Awesome. Great. And that wraps up today's episode. A huge thank you to you, Susan, for sharing such practical insights on the world of data analytics. If you enjoyed this conversation, be sure to subscribe to MarTech Unraveled on your favorite podcast platform and also leave us a review. It helps others like you discover the show. And you can also follow me, Fiona Ngaruro, on LinkedIn for updates and upcoming episodes with more industry leaders. Thank you for listening. And until next time, keep unraveling the world of MarTech with us.